are Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans. Welcome to a new edition of Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. You're with Patricia Traina, and I cover your New York Giants for a variety of places. You can find all my work by following me on Twitter at Patricia_Traina. And for today's show, I am joined by Rick Saratella. He works for NFL Draft Scout. And he is currently, as we record this, he's currently down in Florida at the East-West Shrine Game, where he's been all week. He's been observing the practices. He's going to be checking out the game. And, Rick, I want to thank you for coming on the program with me.
Well, thanks for having me on, Patricia. I'm excited to make my Locked On Giants debut here.
Yes, the first of what we hope will be many visits for the program. So, Rick, you've been down at the East-West Shrine Game, and, you know, the Shrine Game is generally not considered as big of a deal as the Senior Bowl. I know that's up next on the schedule, but still quite a number of interesting prospects to have taken place or taken part of of the Shrine Game. Who are some of the prospects off the top of your head who have really jumped out this week at practice?
Yeah, well, you know, listen, before I jump into the prospects, I will say this. The talent level here is just through the roof. And in my 18 years of covering the NFL draft, you know, this was probably the best East-West Shrine Game roster I've seen. And I spoke to the executive director, Harold Richardson, and he echoed those sentiments. And he felt like these are the best rosters that he's had since he's been executive director of the East-West Shrine Game. So, you know, the speed here is what has NFL scouts excited. There's a lot of speedy guys. And I'll start off with Terry Godwin from Georgia. This guy is just playing at a whole nother level than everybody else. And I have him projected to run in the 4-3 range. He's quick. He's athletic. He's a prototypical slot wideout. He's got an impressive game vertically. He's got some ups. Now, you know, there are a few occasions where you see his size, you know, is a little limited at 5'11", 174 pounds. But he had the play of the week. I mean, he plucked a ball out of the air, backhanded, Beckham style, one-handed down the sideline. That was just really a highlight reel type of play. And I think, you know, just his combination of being an excellent route runner and the hands and, you know, listen, undersized, but he is an aggressive blocker. I mean, he does it all. And he's probably the biggest moneymaker this week coming into it just because – at Georgia, you've got Riley Ridley, you've got Mecole Hardman, Terry Godwin, kind of a guy lost in the mix here, and to me, he's the biggest moneymaker this week. And then Jordan Ellis from Virginia, the running back, an explosive runner, just great burst hitting the hole, change of direction, came in at 5'9" and 6/8", 224 pounds. He's just compact, really built a low runner to the ground. And you can tell the coaching staff is taking a liking to him, you know, just with his speed, his hustle. You can tell the coaches are gravitating towards him. I had a chance to speak with him. He's met with over a dozen teams. So I think Jordan Ellis is a guy that, you know, probably a day 3 selection. But I think he's a running back that can outproduce some of the guys that go ahead of him. And then on the defensive side, I'll throw out Cole Holcomb. The North Carolina outside linebacker, just a guy that's got great instincts, active hands. He had an interception one day. He forced a fumble another day. He's got great coverage skills. And you'll appreciate this for the Giants because he's a traditional 4-3 outside linebacker. And I think he's got a chance to be one of the best 4-3 outside linebackers in this year's draft class. But he's had an outstanding week of practice. And you can tell the NFL scouts have recognized that because I spoke to him yesterday and he said he's met with 28 teams already. So, you know, he's been nonstop meeting with teams. I've got a lot of guys here, but I'll just throw one other guy out on the defensive side and we can go whatever direction you'd like, Patricia. But Daniel Weiss from Kansas, look out for this young man on Saturday. I mean, he is just, you talk to the coaches, you talk to the players. Daniel Weiss from Kansas is the name that keeps on popping up. Little bit of a tweener, 6'2" and 4/8", 283 pounds. I think his best fit is on the interior, and he's just a feisty guy. Him and Nick Linder from Indiana went at it yesterday, a little bit of a scuffle there. He's so intense. You know, I try to joke around with him a little bit after the practice. He wasn't having it. This kid's razor sharp focus. He's not messing around, and I think he's going to be somebody who really makes some noise out there on the playing field Saturday.
And, of course, you just named at least three guys. You know, I've been keeping a little tracker myself of guys who have reportedly met with Giants scouts or personnel, Godwin, Weiss, and Ellis, the three guys you mentioned who have, you know, reportedly, again, met with Giants players. So good eye on your part to pick those guys out, mention them as far as the potential Giant needs. Rick, let's talk about quarterbacks because that seems to be the really big hot topic now. I'm pretty sure Haskins isn't at this game. I don't believe Murray's at this game, Kyler Murray. But what talent is at this game, and what have you seen from the quarterbacks so far?
Yeah, I think what you have here are some middle to late round guys that, you know, teams are going to bring in and try to develop. And I'll start off with the Boise State signal caller, Brett Rippon, 6'1" and 6'8", 204 pounds he weighed in. Crisp, accurate, short to intermediate range type of passer. And he has experience. He's a four-year starter. The nephew of Mark Rippon, who's kind of guided him through his whole collegiate career. What's interesting is I spoke with him. He's met with over 20 teams, he said. But what was interesting speaking with him is they're actually running the Tampa Bay Buccaneers offensive scheme here at the East-West Shrine Game, the Dirk Cutter offense. And Cutter was the Boise State head coach from 1998 to 2000. Believe it or not, a lot of the terminology is still similar. And Rippon's been able to pick that up and communicate that in the huddle and really just be able to get his teammates in the right spot. So, you know, I like his command in the huddle. I like his accuracy and arm strength. He doesn't have elite arm strength, but he can make all the throws. And I think Brett Rippon right now is probably, you know, maybe he slides into day two, if not an early day three prospect, in my opinion. The other guy that, you know, everyone's been impressed with is Jordan Tiamu from Mississippi. And, you know, maybe a little bit underrated on his collegiate career just because he's had so many weapons. You know, people kind of said, you know, hey, well, listen, he's got A.J. Brown. He's got D.K. Metcalf. He's got DeMarcus Lodge, who's also here at the East-West Shrine Game. Three NFL caliber type of wide receivers he's been throwing at during his career. So maybe he didn't get the credit he deserved. But you talk to the scouts, you talk to the players, he's the first quarterback that people are bringing up. And I think it's his athleticism, his ability to improvise, buy time in the pocket, throw on the run, where you're seeing a lot more NFL offensive schemes take after that model. I think he's a guy that, you know, can come in. You know, Seattle Seahawks is a team that comes to mind. They signed a guy, Paxton Lynch, I know yesterday. But Jordan Tiamu would be a guy that is more in the Russell Wilson type of mold, a guy that you want to kind of have in there to develop and maybe be a backup at the next level. And then one last guy is Purdue quarterback David Blau, really highly recruited out of high school. And quite honestly, the hype on him was so great. He just couldn't live up to those expectations. 6'3.5", 205 pounds. What stood out to me was the leadership characteristics, calling out pre-snap reads, making sure his teammates are lined up, calling out the mic for his offensive line. His two-minute drill was the best amongst any of the quarterbacks that I saw. And I like his, you know when David Blau is on the field because his cadence is loud, it's sharp, it's crisp. And I wouldn't be surprised if he draws a couple offside, you know, gets those defenders to jump offsides on Saturday.
Have the quarterbacks been mostly working under center, or have they mostly been working from the shotgun? I know in college, a lot of quarterbacks work out of the gun more than they do, you know, under center. But what have you seen as far as what the coaching staffs have had them do this week?
A little bit of both. I would say more so shotgun than underneath center. But they've been mixing it up and making sure they get both of those reps in there. So it's been a little bit of a mixed bag.
And Rick, for people who aren't familiar with the differences of working under center versus working from the gun, from a scouting perspective, can you just explain for the listeners why that's such an important thing and an important difference, and what coaching staffs look for when a quarterback is under center versus working from the shotgun?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a big part because, you know, a lot of people think that quarterbacks are about the arm and the arm strength and the throwing and the accuracy. But in reality, a big fundamental part of playing quarterback position is having your lower body in sync with your upper body. And if you don't have the proper footwork, especially under center, when you're making your 3, 5, 7 foot drop backs, it's all about timing at the next level. So a big part of that is making sure that the footwork is in sync with your arm. And that's, I think, where players tend to struggle at the next level, because they don't have that repetition. They don't have that experience. And then they have to get with the quarterback coach and kind of make sure that their footwork is in sync. And, you know, again, the timing is crucial. You know, when you're making a 3-foot, 5-foot, 7-foot drop, it's all about having your lower body working in sync with your upper body.
Okay, very important element for sure. Folks, you're listening to Locked On Giants with Patricia Traynor, special guest Rick Saratella of NFL Draft Scout. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to continue to get Rick's evaluations and observations from the East-West Shrine Game, so stay with us. Welcome back to Locked On Giants with Patricia Traynor and Rick Saratella, who is with NFL Draft Scout. He's been spending the last week down at the East-West Shrine Game. He's on his way to the Senior Bowl. So, you know, that's just getting started as we air this particular podcast. So we're focusing on getting Rick's observations and notes from the East-West Shrine. And we just finished talking about quarterback. Rick, staying on offense for a moment, another, you know, area the Giants are certainly going to be looking to add, whether it be in free agency or the draft, is going to be offensive line. Now, from what I have heard, the interior part of the line, guards and centers, is a pretty good class, but there's some question marks about the tackle class. Is that pretty much what you have seen?
Yeah, you know, this has been a growing concern amongst the league, and you see it all over. Every team needs offensive line help. There's a lack of quality players coming out of college, and while everybody is singing the praise of these, you know, college coaches that run these high octane spread offenses, you see guys getting hired now in the NFL, the Cliff Kingsbury's of the world, and you know, the opposite end of the spectrum with that is that these spread offenses have kind of watered down the offensive line techniques and fundamentals and the quality of play, because it's more of a hurry up, you know, run and gun, you know, go, go, go. And I think we're seeing the lack of fundamentals with the development. And that's why you're not seeing as many offensive linemen go in the first round. And I think, you know, the guys like a Greg Little from Ole Miss, like a Jonah Williams from Alabama, those are probably your top two tackle prospects. Now you have a Yadni Kajust from West Virginia who might slide into the first round, a Jawan Taylor from Florida who may slide into the first round. That's going to be more based due to the necessity of the position, not so much the talent of the position. And it's just really a growing concern at all levels of football, when you go from the NFL to the CFL, and hopefully with the Alliance League and the XFL, maybe that's one thing where they can start developing offensive linemen and quarterbacks, because these guys just aren't getting enough reps.
Do you think that's a reason why we see a lot of college tackles project to play guard at the next level? Because they just, you know, because of the college systems that they're in, they're just not getting the development that would make them, you know, bona fide tackle prospects at the NFL level?
No doubt about it. I mean, and, you know, I'll give you a perfect example of that here in the Shrine Game. Brian Wallace from Arkansas, highly recruited coming out of high school, a 4- or 5-star recruit. You look at the measurements, he weighs in at, you know, 6'5½, 317 pounds, an incredible wingspan, 84 5/8 inches, 36 inch arms, you're saying, oh my God, he's a perfect mold for an offensive tackle. But then, you know, Arkansas playing that spread offensive system that they were in this year, you know, you watch him on film and he's just getting beat. He's out of position. He struggles with speed. You know, they tried him at left tackle at Arkansas. He couldn't cut it. He comes down to the Shrine game. They've now kicked him inside, like you said, to the guard position, because that's where the NFL scouts want to see him, on the interior. And because he struggles with the speed and he can get off, get beat off the snap of the ball, he's just not built to last on the outside, the tackle position, where you have to play the edge. You're matched up a lot of times one-on-one. And due to his ability to, you know, struggle against the speed, a guy like that, unfortunately, because he has all the measurables, has to kick inside and play guard now, just so that he's not as susceptible to that speed.
Okay, interesting. You know, interesting development there, because, you know, I know when they take offensive linemen, very rarely do you see a guy come in and hit the ground running like you did, you know, several years ago, especially on the at the tackle position. And of course, it just so happens one of the needs the Giants have is going to be at right tackle, where I'm almost positive they're going to look to upgrade that position. And it just sounds to me like they're probably going to go the veteran route at that position, rather than maybe get a guy to come in and be an instant starter. And, you know, you mentioned Jonah Williams. I saw something this morning where now there's some debate over whether or not his best position at the NFL level is going to be tackle or guard, but more and more people seeming to think that it's going to be at guard. I mean, are you thinking the same thing, or too early to tell?
I am not. I've broken down the offensive linemen very thoroughly in this draft class, and I haven't seen a better left tackle prospect, in my opinion. So if there's a better left tackle prospect out there, I would love to know who it is. And again, these guys don't grow on trees, as you know. Jonah Williams has all the tools in the toolbox. So, you know, my first goal would be to try him at the tackle position. And then, you know, if he does struggle, you can always kick him inside. But I think, you know, there's no doubt in my mind he's going to get every opportunity to play tackle at the next level, for sure.
And then, Rick, let's swing over to the defensive side of the ball, because that's the side that, you know, that just about everybody I've spoken to, everybody who I've read, they are just absolutely overflowing with giddiness over the depth that is in the defensive side of the ball. What you've seen from the Shrine game so far, I mean, do you agree? Where do you see the strength of this draft based on the Shrine talent?
Well, I think the overall strength of the draft is on the defensive line position, where, you know, I could see possibly like 10 defensive linemen in the first round. That's how talented and deep of a defensive line class this is. And then I would also say that, you know, the defensive backs, I really like the secondary cornerbacks in this draft class. And, you know, a couple guys here that have stood out from Troy, a small school guy, Blaise Brown. You know, he's just a fast guy, quick recovery speed, made a couple of excellent, you know, pass breakups where he just doesn't give up on the ball and you think the receiver is going to come down with it. But there's that man again, Blaise Brown. He's just been, you know, sticking to guys' hips and been in their back pocket all week long. And then, you know, you take a look at some of the size of these cornerbacks, and Kentucky has this kid, Derek Beatty, 6'3", 188 pounds. You know, this is where the NFL is trending towards taller, lean corners that can also come up and make tackles. The little man syndrome, they call it, is Jimmy Moreland from James Madison. This is a guy you really want to mark down and remember and store for the memory bank. I think he had 8 interceptions this year, a couple of pick 6 for interceptions. And again, FCS player, 5'11", 175, so maybe he projects in the slot at the next level. But he's been taking on everybody that comes his way and really holding his own. I think Jimmy Moreland maybe made himself more money than any defensive back here at the East-West Shrine Game. And then I'll give you one last guy. I had a chance to talk to Andrew Wingard, who's met with just about every single team, 28 teams, he said, to his calculations. But Andrew Wingard is a strong safety in the box, ball hawk. I think he's had a couple seasons of over 100 tackles, and that's something that the Giants might want to look at here. I know Curtis Riley, I just saw, as a matter of fact, before we came on the podcast, I saw that he had the most missed tackles, I believe, of any safety in the NFL last season. So Andrew Wingard is a guy that does not miss tackles. And, you know, I asked him to give me a scouting report of himself, and he just said, I'm a psycho on the field. And you just see that with the reckless demeanor. He's just added 100 miles per hour every single play.
That's funny. I like that. I like when they, you know, they have a little bit of craziness in them. You have to have a little bit of craziness in you to play on the defensive side of the ball. You know,
absolutely.
Similar question to when I asked you about tackles and guards. Sometimes at the college level, you have these cornerbacks, and then they get to the pro level, they project more to safety. Are you seeing a lot of that in this particular draft class, where you have college corners who, for whatever the reason, are just maybe not good fits at that position for the NFL level and are probably going to project better inside?
You know, I think you got to take those case by case. And you know, we mentioned the Kentucky kid, Beatty, where, you know, I think he'll get a chance at corner. But I think a lot of times it comes down to also the speed. And, you know, at 6'3", 188 pounds, is he going to be able to run with the big dogs? Is he going to be able to cover a Terry Godwin, for example, who he might have 4 or 5 inches on height-wise? But if he can't maintain the speed and keep up with him, then, you know, maybe he gets a chance at free safety. And I think you see a lot of the taller corners who don't test well in the speed department, or their time speed doesn't translate to the on-field performance. That's when you kind of start to see them, you know, slide over to the free safety position. And I think, you know, I think every player is a different case-by-case example, depending on fit, depending on scheme and what teams are looking for.
And how would you assess the linebacker crop of talent based on, you know, what's at the Senior Bowl, the Shrine Game, as well as just the overall, you know, makeup of the class? I know there's some people who are split on how good that linebacker class really is. And, you know, for a Giant team that plays a 3-4 defense, you know, the edge rushers are going to be at a premium for them. But, you know, there might be some tweaks inside they might make.
Sure. And, you know, again, it comes down to what you're classifying guys at linebacker, because now you have guys that play defensive end in college. Montez Sweat, for example, at Mississippi State, who, you know, could project that outside linebacker at the next level. And then you have a guy like Josh Allen, who played in a 34 defense on the edge at Kentucky this past season, but I could state an argument that he might be better off playing outside linebacker in a 4-3 scheme, and I think he's capable of doing that. But, you know, I do like the linebacker class. I don't think it's quite as I'll say this, it's not as deep as the defensive line or the defensive backs, but, you know, there's some good players here. For example, this Sione Takitaki from BYU, really just what a different demeanor talking to him than his intensity on the field. And I don't know if you had a chance to see this BYU bowl game. I think he had over 20 tackles. Like every other play, Sione Takitaki, that's all you heard, Takitaki making a tackle, Takitaki making a tackle. So I think that's a perfect example of a guy here that, you know, yeah, he's at the East-West Shrine Game. Yeah, he might not test as well as some of these other guys, but I think he can develop into a starter at the next level, and so can Khalil Hodge from Buffalo. He's flying really way under the radar, and, you know, Khalil Mack is a linebacker that came out of Buffalo, and he's played the edge. Khalil Hodge is more of an inside linebacker, so even though it's the same school, you know, he's going to probably be on the interior. And, you know, Justin Hollins from Oregon is a guy where, you know, he's played a little bit of both. So he's got great size. He's got the size to play outside. He's got the speed to play outside, but he has the experience to play inside during his time at Oregon. So that's a guy that kind of has the versatility to be viewed as a inside or outside prospect. So I think overall, listen, depending on what you're looking for and depending on, you know, what you want to convert these guys to, There's going to be, you know, a lot of talent to go around, a lot of help in the early to middle late rounds. And again, it's really based on need and scheme and fit. A Brian Burns from Florida State played defensive end at Florida State. He could be kicked outside. I mean, you're seeing some big linebackers now playing that edge position in the 34 defensive scheme. So, you know, beauty's in the eye of the beholder, and I think the better coaches in the NFL will take players and put them in positions to succeed. And I think a lot of times when guys struggle at the next level, a lot of it has to do with the coaching, because, you know, they'll take a square peg, try to fit it in a round hole and make a guy adapt to a specific scheme, even though that's not where their strong suit is. So I like the linebacker class, but hey, Patricia, I like the draft. So, you know, I've always been a firm believer. A seventh round pick is just as valuable as a first round pick. And that's just, you know, my personal belief, because I see it year after year. If you do your homework and you do your due diligence and you know what kind of players you're looking at, it happens every year. There's starters taking rounds 1 through 7. You just need to identify these guys. And I would never trade away draft picks because, in my opinion, they're just too valuable.
Good stuff there, Rick. We're going to take our final break, come back. We're going to wrap up talk on the East-West Shrine game and maybe get your take, some early impressions on the Senior Bowl, which kicks off as we air this particular podcast. So, folks, do stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Locked On Giants. You're with Patricia Traina and special guest Rick Saratella. He is with NFL Draft Scout, and he is making his way across the sunny part of the United States as we speak with him. He was in Tampa, I believe, for the Shrine Games played in Tampa, right? Or is that the Senior Bowl?
Yeah, St. Petersburg.
St. Petersburg.
At the Tropic Bowl. Yeah,
and the Senior Bowl will be down in Mobile, of course, and you know a warmer part of the country than it is up here in New Jersey, where we're experiencing some wintry mixes. So I'm sure you don't miss the cold and the wind and just the brutal conditions.
Yeah, no, I didn't have to pack my Timberlands, and I was happy about that. And I'll be making my way out to Mobile for Sunday, where, you know, I think there might be some snow coming in on the Jersey front. So hats off to you. Get the shovels ready. All my people with the bad backs out there, I definitely feel your pain. I've been there.
Oh gosh, I mean, I'm not looking forward to that. But you know, Rick, let's wrap up some thoughts on the Shrine Game, because again, for those, you know, who didn't catch it at the beginning of the program, we tape this podcast before the actual playing of the game. So unfortunately, because of scheduling, you're hearing it afterwards. But Rick, just give me, if you would, a few names that you would recommend Giant fans keep an eye on, not just in the Shrine Game, but as we go through, you know, the Senior Bowl, as we go through the Combine, the Pro Days. Who are some guys who you think might round into shape as guys the Giants are really going to give serious consideration in terms of the draft?
Well, you know, we always talk about offensive line when it comes to the Giants, right? And we had a chance to talk about Brian Wallace from Arkansas earlier in the show. I'll give you a guy that I think the Giants would be interested in is this Trey Pipkins from Sioux Falls. You know, small school guy that came out here. He began the first part of the week playing offensive tackle. They kicked him inside to guard. We talked about this earlier in the show, but you know, I think his was due more to the injuries, and they're playing at a high speed out here. A lot of these guys haven't played and suited up for 6 weeks. They come out here, they're flying around the football field. Injuries are going to happen. The Shrine Game does not replace players if they get injured. It's just whoever's here, we make do with what we have. And Trey Pipkins has been the ultimate team player, playing tackle, playing guard. I asked him about his transition from small school playing against the Power 5 conference guys, and he said it's really not too big of a deal. He's just relied on his technique, beating his opponents to the spot. He'll need to gain some upper body strength, and that's the feedback he's gotten from the scouts. But I think this is a guy where, you know, if the Giants have to invest in a veteran guy, they're still going to need depth and develop some of these younger guys. And you saw Chad Wheeler, an undrafted guy who's still, you know, sticking around, and they're trying to mold him. I think Trey Pipkins could be a guy that kind of fits that mold. One more guy from the Shrine game that, you know, I made a comp to Rhett Ellison is CJ Conrad. 6'4.5", 252 pounds. I think he's a Rhett Ellison clone. And, you know, he's a great blocker. He can also, you know, do some damage in the pass catching game where, you know, we've seen that when Evan Engram went down, Rhett Ellison was a guy that kind of stepped in there and held his own. Now, Conrad has struggled with some drops, not only his collegiate career, but also here throughout practice. But his versatility, you know, to be used in line, to be used in the slot, even in the backfield, you know, the Giants have kind of used Ellison as that fullback spot, not carrying a fullback on the roster. CJ Conrad can do all the same things. So that's just a name to keep an eye on. And then, you know, I'm really looking forward to these quarterbacks at the Senior Bowl. It's going to be very, very interesting. And I love this rule that, you know, the underclassmen who do declare for the draft, as long as you have your college degree, now you can play in the Senior Bowl. And that's going to be really awesome to see. Daniel Jones from Duke has accepted an invitation. Jarrett Stidham from Auburn. Two junior quarterbacks who will be there with Drew Lock of Missouri. Suddenly, this is a really sexy-looking group of quarterbacks at the Senior Bowl that I'm looking forward to, because I think Daniel Jones and Drew Lock can both kind of solidify their stock as first-round quarterbacks. A lot has been made about this year's group of guys maybe not being as talented as the quarterback class of a year ago, but Daniel Jones, you take a look at, you know, what he's done down at Duke and working with David Cutcliffe, a lot of same mannerisms as Eli Manning when you talk about, and Peyton Manning, because Cutcliffe coached them both, but especially on the ball fakes, the play action, the shoulder shimmy. There's a lot of similarities. Maybe Giants fans don't want to hear this. There are some similarities between Daniel Jones and Eli Manning. I think Drew Lock is a guy that is more, You've seen guys like Blaine Gabbert and Blake Bortles kind of get pushed up into that first round category in the past. I think Drew Lock is a guy that's going to get pushed into the first round. Maybe he doesn't deserve that kind of status, but there's just too many teams across the league looking for a quarterback to either be their franchise quarterback or, you know, groom a quarterback. I mean, hey, Eli Manning, Drew Brees, Ben Roethlisberger, Tom Brady, so many guys around the league who in a couple years from now won't be around anymore. So I think there's some really intriguing talent at the quarterback position at the Senior Bowl. And, you know, hey, we could probably do a whole nother segment on the Senior Bowl prospects. So, you know, I don't know how much you want to get into it, involved with the conversation there. But, I mean, Senior Bowl, these guys, a lot of them are going to be taken on day two. Even some first-round candidates. Josh Allen from Kentucky is expected to play, someone who we just touched base upon. So, yeah, there's a lot of talent that's going to be down in Mobile.
It sounds like, and I keep seeing the names that are being have accepted invitations, and you know, I'm just now kind of familiarizing myself with some of the names, and I can tell right off the bat that there's a lot of buzz about the group that's coming down to Mobile to play in the Senior Bowl, and then finally, Rick, if you could just for those who aren't aware. Some people look at, you know, the progression, you know, you have the Shrine Game, you have the Senior Bowl, then the Combine, then the Pro Days, as a progression for guys to kind of help or hurt their stock. You know, mm-hmm. To me, I would think that the All-Star Games are probably carry more weight, because really at the Combine, it's more of a skill type of thing. They're not really hitting each other. They're not going up against each other. So in your mind, where do you think these players can really solidify their status as far as whether they're first rounder, second rounder, and so forth? Is it going to be at these All-Star Games, or is it going to be maybe at their pro days?
Well, you know, I think everything you mentioned, the process is really just kind of verification and checking off the boxes. I think a lot of, I imagine based on conversations that I've had, most teams have their board set already coming into the All-Star game process, and it's really a matter of checking off the boxes. I firmly believe the resume has already been laid down. Your foundation has been built on your film. That's going to be 80% of your grade. Now, where you can kind of improve your draft stock and kind of make and break your where you're taken is through the All-Star games, through the combine. And I think what scouts look for is that apples-to-apples, orange-to-orange comparison where, you know, you get 350 guys out in Indianapolis. They're all running on the same turf. They've all got to deal with the same conditions. So you get an idea and say, hey, well, did I see this guy on film? Is his speed now matching up to what the laser time is saying? And I think that's where, you know, you can kind of improve your draft stock. At the end of the day, when the teams are in the war room, if they're looking at two players that are very similar at the same position, I think then they're going to go to the measurables and say, hey, usually 9 times out of 10, speed is going to win all arguments because you just can't teach that. And I think that's where, you know, if you go in and you have a great combine workout, then people are going to pay attention. Or if you have a good All-Star game, now, especially if you're a smaller school guy, now you're giving scouts a reason to go back and recheck the film. And I think that can really help out a prospect where, you know, maybe a scout is just kind of vaguely familiar with the player and then they have an outstanding week of practice at the All-Star game. It's like, hey, I need to go back and circle back and get his film and make sure I'm not missing something here.
Interesting stuff. Rick, before I let you go, tell everybody, I know we can find your work on NFL Draft Scout. Where else can they find you on social media or any other place where you happen to be contributing?
Yeah, I think the best way is to just give us a follow on Twitter at NFL Draft Bible. And, you know, I've been covering the draft for the past 18 years, and it's been an honor and a privilege to partner up with the guys over at NFLDraftScout.com this year. And all my work is featured up there. We'll have a great NFL draft guide available for download this year. I'm excited about that. I'm already well over 400 player write-ups. I got, you know, 400 plus scouting reports in the bank, so I'm looking to have about 500 player write-ups in that draft guide. Keep a lookout for that, and you know, I'm sure we'll cross paths somewhere soon in our travels, Patricia. So I appreciate you having me on the Locked On Giants podcast. Of course, you know, Big Blue is something we do, so anytime you want to have me on, I definitely look forward to it.
Well, we certainly appreciate that, and hopefully I see you at the Combine. I know I'm headed out to the Combine for a few days, you know, weather permitting, of course, you know, assuming we can get out on the flights and stuff, but always a good time at the Combine.
Yes, you'll definitely see me there, and that trip we may have to pack the Timberlands.
Yeah, exactly. Let's hope not. The last couple of years, it's been nice weather out in Indianapolis,
yeah,
where you don't have you haven't needed your, you know, to bundle up. But you know, thank God for the indoor walkways. That's for sure. You never need a coat to go outside because you're not really outside.
Yeah, they definitely did a great job in Indianapolis. Whoever the architecture or developer was there, yeah, that's the beautiful thing. If it does snow, you don't ever have to go outside.
That's if you're in the hotels that have those walkways. This year I'm not, but, you know, it's okay. I'm right across the street, so it doesn't matter. A little cold won't hurt anybody. But anyway, folks, that's Rick Sertella of NFL Draft Scout. Does a great job. Do give him a follow. Patricia Traina, thanking you as always for listening to Locked On Giants. We'll talk to you again later in the week. Take care.